From Los Angeles, California, here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which Is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, and other organizations for the purpose of improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. This seminar is entitled, Hold the Image of Completion. Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about the movement.
Let's just pitch the movement for a second. What does it teach? Health, wealth, and happiness. What else is there worthwhile here? Well, lusts, orgies, greed. So that all comes under health and happiness. And the wealth is so you can afford it. It's very practical. And what are some of the, let's say, creeds, codes, ethics? You know, and it's another one is like, don't hurt yourself and don't hurt others. Take care of yourself so you can help take care of others. I use the word help, I should probably say assist. But we understand to go beyond the word and get that meaning behind it. It also propounds a couple things that just about destroy ministers of certain fundamental approaches to spirit. So let me destroy you half a dozen more. One, God loves all of its creation. Can you imagine that? Profound. God loves all of its creation. Why? Because God loves itself, because otherwise it couldn't be God. And you're part of that creation because you are also God creating. Yeah, a little hanky-panky at times, but still in there. Another thing, and listen careful to this, out of God comes all things. When that one hit me, nobody could hurt my feelings anymore. Oh, I play the game. Like, I don't like you saying that. Why? Because that's helped them release their karma. I don't care if they say it. But I'll fire it back on them. And then they go through the, oh, wow, woe is me. And I just sit and laugh and think, oh, boy, your karma's working out in a hurry. Fantastic. Then when I get through doing a lot of the devious things I have to do, and they're all up here, and I say, you know, I really got to tell you that it was all just a great big make-believe. It was just to alleviate you of your karma. And everything's really fine. And they go, oh, yeah. I say, but you know, it was fine all along that we were working it out. Because God loves you, and all things come from God. Even your misery, even your pain, even your tension. It's not the highest God, however, but it's in the ballpark. However, you have to remember, in the ballpark, there are foul lines. And if you get out too far in left field or right field, you're not in the game. So the parameters, the domains of spirit, are set. And we can just walk along within them. Last night I was talking here about the attitude, the magic word, a great magic. Great, great magic. And it's a process of optimism and pessimism. It's the process of courage or discouraged. And in between there, you're the fulcrum that you balance this consciousness on. And you'll determine it by moving your attitude someplace along this fulcrum point to see whether you tilt in the negative of discourage, or you move it to balance and to the courage. And sometimes we have to be very courageous when we've been very discouraged for a long period of time. But it's amazing, when we've been down in the hole at number two, we've been so discouraged, we'll go up past 10 to 15 to balance out that negativity we had, to come back to number 5, get in the parameters, balance the life. We teeter-totter back and forth. I call them yo-yos. I say, you yo-yo. Yo-yos are a lot of fun. Look at the things you can do with them. Around the world, under your leg, through the armpit. Just lack of imagination is lack of fun of being a yo-yo. The choice is always ours. If out of God comes all things, then why are you complaining to God and praying to God to alleviate all the things that are coming your way to give you the great unfoldment? Like, well, what'll I pray for then? You say, oh, God, give me understanding what's going on. That's what you want, the understanding. No, let's not change it. Why? You're not going to develop if they take away that very thing that is strengthening you. You're not going to grow. You're going to become very placid and weak, and you're going to fall. And the first wind that blows your way is like, oh, and you're gone. People say, how can you look at that? I mean, what if you broke your leg? I'd say, thank you, God, for this broken leg. I get to be away from people for a long time, and I get to do my spiritual exercises, and I get to be waited on hand and foot. And I'm going to put these people through the paces. I'll want this, and I'll want that. And they'll be so glad when I'm well. And they're going to do everything to be sure that I get well, so I'll leave them alone. I'll have them involved in my life, whether they like it or not. You can do all of it. Somebody says, well, what about cancers? Thank you, God, for this cancer. That's why. Because I'm going to use that pain to purify myself, and I'm going to be able to hold to God regardless of anything, and thanks for the testing. And the moment that I die, there'll be nothing that can distract me because I will have overcome the pain. I will be living in God long before the devil knows that I'm dead. I'll be there. It's like, what about the headache? What about the headache? Sit up straight and get rid of it. Learn to sit up straight. Learn your posture. It's like, yeah, yeah, okay. I can handle a lot of things. We can enter into all of these things and make them very positive. But isn't it true? As a man thinketh in his heart, he becomes. You know, one of the laws of the mind is hold the picture in your mind that you want more of, and you'll get it. You hold the picture in your mind you want less of, you're going to get it. So when you start getting the things that you don't really care for, I say, well, what have you been thinking about? They say, that. I say, you see, it works. It's negative proofing, but it's proof. People come to me and they say, oh, John Roger, I got the shakes. I'm just shaking. Look, I'm just shaking. Look, I'm just shaking. I got the shakes. I'm just shaking. Say, yeah, okay, you're shaking. You got the shakes. Isn't that terrible? I said, well, I don't know. I haven't seen anybody shake a lot. I don't have too many reference points. They say, what do I do about it? I said, well, you know, you can get a job shaking up milkshakes in a park or something. I mean, I'm not into vocational counseling, but there's bound to be something that'll be good. Maybe get a job scratching somebody's back. They say, yes, but people make fun of me. Say, make fun of them right back. Many years ago, I was sitting with some students on a high school lawn, and we were talking. And one of them said to me, hey, look at that guy across the street. He's wasted. He's so terrible. God, what a person. And I looked at the person. I thought, I don't see the wasted and any of that. And it was just shortly after that that the person who had been on the other side of the street came into my frequency. He says, oh, yeah, I saw you sitting on over there on the lawn with those guys. They really wasted. What a terrible bunch of guys. Oh, wow. And I thought, gee, you know, here are these two people looking at each other, coming up with the same thing, and each one thought they were better. Well, you know, there is a thing called projection. We do project out of our own field of inadequacies, our own field of great fear and our great concern onto other people, and then we attempt to make them conform to it. I remember years ago somebody said to me, I don't like your suit. I said, buy me a new one. I said, well, it isn't too bad. fact, it looks all right. It looks pretty good on you. You wear it really well. And I said, buy me a new suit. That's the least you could do for me, is buy me a new suit. Well, they still have done the least for me. They haven't bought the new suit. But at least, if you're going to come to somebody with criticism, be sure you can supply that that will constructively lift them. Or keep your mouth shut. And people say, well, what can you say good about halitosis? Bad breath. They say, it's better than no breath at all. And they say, oh, that's not good enough. I say, buy stock in the search company. Then buy stock in onion delivery. And you're going to reap a fortune. Give them the onions and give them the certs. And then give them the onions and give... You got it made. Yeah, the attitude is what we're dealing with here. But you must remember that you also are creators. And that is where we get the rub. Because we can create failure by stress. By stress. Why do you want to create stress? It's like, well, I don't know, I just get tight. Why don't you start paying attention to where you're tight, that I'm tight across my shoulders? Well, of course, you're sitting funny. Sit up straight. A lot of tension will go away. It's like, well, I always sit sloppy. That's right, and you have just now reinforced your sloppiness. It's like, yeah, but it's too hard to sit up straight. Now you've nailed yourself. I say, well, my mother and dad always told me I was sloppy. I can't do anything about it. Now you've nailed yourself again. Pretty soon you're going to be absolutely crucified, and you're the one who's doing it to yourself. And then when you have aches and pains and distress and worry and concern, you're going to say, there's no God. Why this? I said, well, you did it to yourself. People don't want to believe that. They would much rather believe that somebody else did it to them. Blame me. I don't care. Blame somebody who can take the blame. Go ahead. I'm accused of so many things. I say, go ahead, lay on another one. Why? Who cares? You think it's going to bother me that you've got yourself thinking that way? Is it going to make... Think I'm a millionaire. See if that does anything... Does it make any difference? It's like, no. Doesn't do anything. Doesn't make any difference. But it will inside of you, and that's what I'm talking about. Is it positive thinking? Well, yes and no. I'm not a proponent of positive thinking. Because I think you also have to realize that there could be something there that isn't for you. And you have the wit to get out of it. And often that's the understanding you pray for. Oh, God, give me the understanding. He says, get out of here. You say, can I? It's not can I, it's may I. Just a baby step out. It clears, and it's like, well, why didn't I think of that before? And God says, I don't know. Why didn't you think of that before? It's why, because my folks always said I was dumb, and I can't think, and of course, that's got to be it. No, it doesn't have to be it. At this moment, you transform yourself. At this moment, you come into that that is your awareness. You know, when you play certain games of exercise, of fun, tennis, golf, table tennis, badminton, they say, keep your eye on the ball. And everybody who misses it, if they're playing golf, they start swinging, they look to where the ball's going, and when they get to swinging, the ball was where they should have been looking. That's a fundamental thing, is watch what you're doing. And when they start watching what they're doing, that part of them that knows what's going on reveals itself. And that ball goes sailing down, and you say, I don't know how I did it. You don't have to know how you did that. You do it the same time next time. That part of you that did it knows how to do it. And if you keep it up long enough, it will become a habit, and then you can watch your habit and learn from yourself. It's an easy approach. The other approach is to downgrade yourself and say, I'll never make it. I won't be any good. We must psych ourselves up to our spiritual awareness level and let the energy flow around us, through us, and ahead of us to the goal. What are we saying? We're saying you get the picture in your mind that you want that shows that completion in the most positive, beautiful way. And you keep that image in your mind until you get it. And one moment you waver on it, you don't get it. It comes in backwards, sideways, deteriorating. Then you say, the Lord didn't answer my prayer. Precisely the way you put it out. Precisely. You engineered it, you smart one, you. And it was delivered. But you say, but it didn't come in when I contracted it to come in. Not yet. You have to be tested to see if you can endure. Because when you do, you're going to be ordained with great, great power. And you cannot abuse it. If you can't hold up on a little bit of discouragement, how can you hold up when the big thing comes along? If somebody says to you, no, I can't go tonight, and you fall apart, what happens when the big test comes along? You think you'll be ready? I used to have that thought. Say, why do I have to study? I'll just wait and take the test. Teachers used to say to me, well, maybe you'll fail the test. I said, well, it might be true that I'll fail the test. But I'm no dummy when it comes to tests. This is when I started the radical thinking process. And the teacher was really quite perplexed that I wouldn't study. I would just sit and absorb the information. I had this philosophy, what I have to know is going to pop out at me and I'm going to know it. My prayer is, I hope I recognize it. It's like, I hope I recognize you when you appear. What was funny is I took a test of the teacher, and I failed. He says, you failed the test? I said, yeah. He says, don't you feel bad? I said, no. He said, why? I said, well, that test revealed to me what I don't know. I'm going to study that. I don't have to waste my time on the other stuff. The teacher looked at me like, yeah? Yeah? There's that approach, but that's not the fair approach. That's not the correct approach. And my response was, that's the correct approach because I don't have time to waste on your mechanical rote approaches. I must glean the information, gather it, synthesize it so I can utilize it as I do my breathing. And I've got to be able to get through the shuck you're putting out real fast to get to that. And don't waste my time. Don't give me your other stuff of falderal. Give me that that I must know. Who knows that better than me? So all we do is go to school to get training, and we educate ourselves. Isn't that interesting? They show us the technique. They show us everything. They tell it to us. And then we're supposed to get it. If I said to you, do we have any ballet dancers in here? Raise your hand. Do we have ballet dancers? Anybody who's done ballet dancing? So, if I said to you, glissade ensemble, tamoré, parlez-vous, you may say, what? But if I got up and did it for you, you may say, oh, yeah, I see what a glissade is. A tamoré, parlez-vous, ensemble. You see? But it's still there, and only when you've had that previous experience do you know the sound by which you listen to it. And it awakens to you then the imagery in your mind. And you call it forth and you produce it. And that's education. Educate means to evoke, to call forth from you your wisdoms, your knowledge. But that wisdom and that knowledge must be uncapped, and it is uncapped through faith. It's uncapped through, I can do that. Yes, I can do that. Yes, I will. And it isn't just sitting in the chair then. It is getting up and it says, show me. They demonstrate the dance step and you repeat it behind them. And they say, not quite. Now we're going to do the technique. Now we're going to professionalize. Now we're going to synthesize. Now we're going to perfectionize. And then you can perform for others. And have that whole joy of presentation. Only when you've got it. And who's going to determine that? The teacher? No way. The public. When I talk to people, I don't talk to one individual to get you to change anything. I talk to the soul inside of you that knows it. And it hears it. And it recognizes it. And it stands up beside and it says, here it is, here it is, I'm ready. And I say, then get the energy down through all the levels. I say, well, the energy I have, JR, is positive, but they're doing stinking thinking. How do I get it through? I say, well, I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. Maybe you can bring them into a seminar and see all the beautiful, loving people who've gone through hell in their consciousness, who have problems today and problems yesterday, and they're going to have problems tomorrow. But when they leave the seminar, their attitude is going to be, they'll handle that. And they're not going to say, oh, it's going to be easy, or no, it's not going to be easy. They're just going to handle that. And when it comes your way, good or bad, for ill will, for goodwill, you treat it the same inside of you. Because all of that is coming out of the consciousness of God. And if you only go the positive way, you're in a fanatical field. And if you go in a negative way, you may be in a rebellious field. But that process of radical understanding produces you in the very center of reality. And that moment of enlightenment is when reality comes and grabs a hold of you and presents itself to you, and you say, I see, I understand. But at that moment, you've released the conditioning of your life. You've set aside all expectations of what people should or shouldn't be doing. What is spiritual, what is not, what's fair, what's not fair. And you're just observing life. And in that observation, the clarity appears. And in that moment of clarity, then you move inside of you. And you complete the action. And in the completing of the action, it isn't, oh, look what I've done. But it is, okay, next. When that's done, it's okay. Next. I know a lot of people that are still living the dinner of 2 years ago and the first marriage and that first car and that first romance and that first this and their first spiritual experience 15 years ago. And I say, what have you had recently? What have you done today? I say, well, I was so happy last week. Well, why aren't you happy today? People say, John Roger, I come into the movement. And I come into a seminar, and something moves inside of me. I've been trying to find out what that is, because it produces the nicest thing. I can't describe it to you. It's not bliss. It's not joy. It's a calm. I have a calmness that appears. I just feel peacefully contented. And that's fine. But then about 3 or 4 days later, I go through a crisis. Can you tell me what that is? And I say, well, sure. That's easy. When you came here, you entered into the conducting of divine energy. And when you left here, you fell back into the negativity of your own mind and emotions, and it beat you in the head. And that's your crisis. It doesn't want you either. There's no place here. Going to be able to lay your head and say, peace, contentment, quietness, this is it. There'll be times it'll be temporary that you'll feel very good. But have you noticed when you're really feeling good and things are really fine, you don't do your spiritual exercises? Have you noticed that, my friends? I have. And then when things start going a little funny, and it's like, I don't know what's going on. I think I'm getting pain. It's like you sit down in a chair with OJR and you start the spiritual exercises. And it awakens something. You say, I don't know why I don't do that. Because every time I do, things really clear. Well, look, dummy. If it'll clear it, it'll prevent it. Ameliorate it. Modify it. But as soon as you finish that, you enter back into your own strategic delusions, hallucinations of manipulating this world and it lets you believe you're doing it. And you get temporary feelings of euphoria. Euphoria isn't what we're dealing with. That's an out-of-balance condition. Because you're going to have to ricochet right back to the other side, and you're going to have difficulty. Why not find that place where you move into that contentment and that peace, and you look at it and you say, hey, I got to do my lessons. Why? It's practical. I've got to get my degree. Why? That's practical. It's going to open the door for me to allow myself to do other things. I've got to learn how to do this so I can participate, so I can have the joy of participating with my physical body here on this planet. And while I'm doing that, my emotions will feel good. And if I can just get that thought out of my mind, I'm going to fail before I even start, I could even enjoy the approach. I know people who play tennis. You know, tennis is the end game. Ha-ha. To those who are swimming, it isn't. And to those who are playing table tennis, it isn't. Those who are getting fat laying around, that's the game. It's called the inner game of fatness. But a lot of these people play, and they're so nervous before they first hit that ball over the net, and when it's returned, they just are up at it. And they'll charge it to kill it, ram it in the net, and throw the tennis racket down, thinking the tennis racket's no good. Wrong, it was the tennis shoes. Wrong again, it was the ball. Somebody said to me, you know how to play tennis? I said, yeah. And they said, how? I said, just keep the ball on their side of the net. And they said, that's very simple. I said, no, it isn't. It's very hard. But that's how you play tennis. Just always over there, always over there. But see, some people don't really. They think that the game is in the racket. It's not. That's just a means, a method, a mechanistic approach of how you're going to keep that ball over there. That's all. In fact, in truth, if you jumped up in the air to hit that ball and it hit your hand and it went on their side of the net and they didn't get it back, you'd get the point. It doesn't have to hit the racket. It's just desirable. It's part of the rule. If you're golfing and you hit that ball in the air, and it hits a tree and goes in the hole on one stroke, is that still one stroke? Yeah. But see, most people say, well, that doesn't count. It has to go from here, over there, and plop right in the hole. I say, no, it may hit and roll 10 feet and plop in the hole. The idea is in the hole. That's golf, right? In the hole. And those approaches towards it should be those approaches of learning, of unfoldment, of watching, of participating, of enjoyment of that. You people that are acting. They give you a script, and before you get it, you've almost ripped it apart through nervous tension. Why? Maybe it's not for you. So, well then, take it easy. Yes, you should approach it the same way, whether it be for you or it's not for you. You wipe your hands off first so you won't smudge it. And then when you read it, the whole thing is, you read and you start participating in that now. Not, oh, I can't get it. I'm not getting it. I won't get it. That's right, you won't. And when you go to try out for that, they'll say, you read real well, but you didn't get it. And the whole approach is, I've got to get it. And so you must do all of those things that allows you to get it. And there's nothing in any place that you can substitute for that. But have you ever noticed that when you've got the rule, you sometimes wondered how you did it? It's like, I really read really bad. But they said I got the part. And then you go in there and say, hey, they didn't give me that part. They gave me another part that was as bad as what I read for. It's like, yeah. Strange it works that way. If you're going to get married and have success on the planet, you have to do all those things that produce marriage and success on the planet. It does not come that marriage is the end result. It is that moving constantly in the state of courtship, of closeness, of togetherness, It's that process of communicating to it. I was watching some tennis the other day, because there happens to be a lot of tennis on television. And the guy hit the ball wrong. And he was talking to himself. And the commentator said, oh, he's giving himself a lesson. And I just sit in the chair and I said, he is. He's giving himself a lesson. I wonder if he's a good student. The guy said, I hit it wrong. I've got to watch what I do. Okay, I can do better next time. Right? Okay, I got it. I corrected it. I'll hit it over. He won the set. He won the whole tournament thing. He taught himself in the moment of his error, the correction, corrected it, didn't kill himself, didn't berate himself, didn't feel guilty, didn't have time for it because the other guy had crammed it down his throat. He had to come awake immediately alive and respond to the moment. And that guy, as far as I'm concerned, was playing over his head. He was just really playing. It was really nice to watch that. Why not play over your head? Your head doesn't know what's going on. But you inside, you do know what's going on. You've got to trust that. But for a while, you'll listen to the inner voice and it'll chatter to you. You think, that voice in there. I wouldn't pay attention to that either. That's a parrot. Saying, Polly wants a cracker, Polly wants a cracker, Polly wants a cracker. You give it a cracker, bleh. That voice you pay attention to. Because it'll often say, don't do it. It'll rarely say, go bet on the fourth horse in the fifth race of Hialeah or something. It'll say, save your money. Don't do it. And you think, yeah, but today I'll win. I'll win. It's like, you fool, you fool, you fool. I'm going to watch. And you go there and they say, this horse is going to win. I feel it in my bones. You slap down $10 right with them. They lose. Now there's two fools. You don't go by the feeling in people's bones. That's not a practical way to live in spending your money. What is a practical way? You look at it in terms of, if I spend this, how will that increase my spirituality? And it goes right back in your pocket. You say, well, but what if I win $10,000? The what if is the troublemaker. You can just as easily ask, what if I don't? And so you treat them both neutrally and you don't bet. Life has enough chances in it just riding down the freeway. Anymore, it's getting to be a chance just to drink the water. And we know that you're taking a chance if you eat the food. What else is there? Well, why do you care? It's all going to die anyway. You say, but JR, isn't it practical to live the best I can? Absolutely, and that's what we talk about. It's practical. Practical means it's for you. They say, why should I study for an examination? It's practical. What should I eat? It's practical to eat. Why do I eat fat foods? Because you no longer entered into the practicalness. You entered into negativity. And that is going to produce itself will be the fruit of your work. And by the fruits you know them. And I'm not kidding you a second. Should we go back to mind chattering? How do we stop the mind chattering? Watch your breathing. Control the breathing, the yogic process. In that space in between breaths, the mind will start slowing down. Will it stop? It's not designed to stop. Perpetual motion. But in between those gaps of chatter, you'll hear the silence that speaks, that roars your name and awakens you spiritually. But you got to get more gaps in there, longer and longer interstices. Then it starts coming through. And it won't come through the way it comes through necessarily anyone else. It comes through the way it comes through. And what do we say? Thank you, Lord. You say, hey, wait a minute, I want writing on the wall. That's what it said in the Bible. It also said the Tower of Babel. And when you get too high for the wrong reasons, it all becomes just a babbling process. And the deciphering of it, don't waste your time. It won't be a waste of time if you have the correct attitude. You say, well, I'll go into language deciphering. Well, you're getting good experience. But I don't know who else is going to be able to communicate in it. It's practical to learn that and be involved in that, that will be effective in its communication to other people. It's practical. They will then supply you with those things that will assist you, those things that will lift you. But if you don't enter into it, in that practicalness of it, have difficulty, then you enter into that old master deceiver called the doubt. But let me tell you something, friends, and I'm going to use this in terms of mankind. It takes a man to walk the spiritual path and see the face of God, and the weak won't make it. And I don't care how clever you are at pushing a pencil around and adding up figures or how many words you know in a vocabulary text, if you're a coward, you're not going to make it. And that coward must be determined by the point of view you take and the point of view you stand upon to enter into the life process. And if you enter into it negatively, that's yours. And if you enter into it in that consciousness of oneness, you will conduct divine energy all around you, and the environment purifies itself. If you go into a place that's really bad, as it purifies, it's going to smack you in the head on its way out, because it won't respect you either. So what we say, take it easy. Don't go to people and cram the light down their throat. They can't take it. Their negativity is going to be too much. They're going to fire on you and call you names to get you to stop. They'll yell at you. They'll be angry at you. What are they really saying? What are they really saying? What do you say when somebody, when you say, listen here, why don't you do what I tell you to do? What are you telling them? Give me your undivided attention on this project we're working on so we can get it done and out of the way. Would you mind? But they're not paying attention, so you place the energy in a level that draws their attention unconditionally, undivided, to that one point. Then they do something about it, and that's what you wanted in the very beginning. Let's do something about this. But that thing of us that we call thick-headed is precisely that, and you can't expect understanding out of it. You expect thick-headed out of it. That part of us that is the ego that blocks us resides right back here in the medulla oblongata. Not too many of the so-called spiritual people know that. And that part of us that identifies us as I, who I am, is right up here in the temple. This part up here gets so caught up with who I am that the ego back here blocks us by presenting energies that block the thinking. And then we start thinking erroneously, and we start forcing through our dominance, to move everybody into our way of doing it. It doesn't work that way. Many people work at it for a while, and they seem to have a lot of success, but it collapses. It falls. It deteriorates. It destroys. Then we say, why me? It's like, why not you? You set it up. It's like, but I didn't want to set it up. I know, but you did set it up, and you're responsible for it. Who else had a chance? Who else? You. Is there any hope? That's about all there is. And what is the hope? Well, possibly the hope is that you'll change your position. But it's highly unlikely you're going to. And that leaves pain, and that'll force you to change. And when you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, and just think about that. When you're sick and tired of lack, when you're sick and tired of all that, you'll change it by moving your consciousness from that I received a letter from a young lady. Oh, John Roger, I'm sick, and this is wrong, and I'm fat, and I'm doing this, and I don't have a boyfriend, and I've only had 400 letters like that from her. So now, if you're going to program the universal mind, you've done a good job. But why not talk about that moment of success when you didn't eat that extra stuff? Hey, I denied that, and I moved to another position. How about talking about today there was no headaches? Don't tell me about your backache. I know it aches. Talk about the healing. Hey, I'm on this new way of eating. I'm going to be feeling better all along. It's going to work for me. I'm going through a cleansing in my system to get rid of this. It's going to be better for me. Instead of, I sure hope this cleansing works because I'm so miserable and I'm so toxic and things are so bad and my boss won't give me a raise. I think, what on earth are you doing, smart one? Why not? I'm going to get myself cleaned up, present myself in that spirit, and they won't be able to deny me those things that are necessary for me. And I'm going to keep on with that until I get that. And I'm not going to hurt anybody. I'm going to take care of myself so I can take care of others. You see how that fits in? I'm going to participate in health, wealth, and happiness inwardly and outwardly. But first, I must participate inwardly. First, inwardly. We go to people to get healing, and they heal us from the outside in. True healing is from the inside out. And we enter into that will heal us. We enter into understanding. It's not that we don't have the dilemma, that we don't have the confusion. It's that we don't get caught up in it and worship it and bow down and keep on repeating it over and over as a sacred mantra. I'm confused. I'm depressed. I'm miserable. I'm sick. You immediately return to that concept of satsang, that concept of relationship with the spirit. Enter into consciousness of the traveler. Enter into that, and it will remove that process that disturbs you because you then understand the divine conducting, that will conduct the energy down. You understand it. It takes place. It is taking place. Right now, even when you're miserable, you just don't get much. It just gives you enough to be miserable to create more negativity. But like attracts like. And when you're like God, you attract God. The cliche, misery loves company. No cliche, true. True. To walk in the path of God, you must walk like God. To enter into living love, you must enter in like living love. You can't enter in crying and gnashing teeth and killing people and think you're going to get into it. That's another path. It goes another direction. If you want understanding, you enter into the path of understanding. You don't enter into the path of saying, you don't understand, get out of my way. But you say, what is it I can do for you? I was talking to a beautiful ashrami last night. And we were talking about working with mental patients. And she said to me, you know, I'm afraid to ask, what do you want? Because I'm afraid they're going to tell me. I said, so? I said, what happens when I say, what do you want? She says, I tell you. I say, I'll see what I can do. She says, you mean I don't have to supply it? I said, no. All you do is ask them what they want and they told you. And if it's reasonable and you can do it, you say, sure. And if you can't, you say, I can't supply that. But you don't push them out of the way or ignore them because you're afraid to ask them, what do you want? You're not obligated because you say hello to somebody to do any more than say hello. And it isn't when somebody says, hello, how are you? You might say, I wonder what they mean by that. That's not the process either. They don't care how are you. They're recognizing you. So you can just wave back and they're satisfied. If you can ignore them. Some people are satisfied that way too. Says, gee, I'm sure glad they didn't answer because they might ask me something I couldn't answer. Whew, I'm sure glad. At least I did my duty. I said hello for the whole year. I don't have to say anything else to them again. I'll show them. Wrong approach. That's just you coming back at you. Because God, through this consciousness, is doing it all. And when we forget that God designs the dance and God dances it through you, then you get miserable. And that misery, I understand. I see it with a lot of you. But you insist upon keeping it, so what can I possibly do? Except say, how's your misery today? Say, very well, thank you. How's yours? Well, not as good as yours. You know, it is the old joke, what do you take for your cold? What do you offer? I said, I don't mean that. I mean, how's your cold? As well as anybody else's. What difference does it make? It's not me anyway. It's just my nose, my throat. What are you doing about it? I'm resting them. I'm letting them clean themselves out. I'm not going to stand in their way. I don't want to give it to you. Why? Because I'm taking care of me and I'm taking care of you. I don't want to dump it on you, but I'm going to anyway. It's like, no, don't dump it on me. Who can I dump it on? Dump it on yourself. You're the one that created it. It's compost. Grow new out of it. Grow new out of it. Everything that comes your way, truly everything, is just another rung of the ladder of opening you. And if somebody steps on your fingers as you reach up for another rung, don't swear at them, but watch where you put your hands so they can't step on them. And you watch. If you see some person who gets out of the car and they slam the door behind them without looking, you wait till they get through their whole ritual of getting out, and then you open the door to get out. But if you put your hands there, they're going to slam them on you every time. And if you like to have your finger slammed, you do that. Once was enough for me. Once. However, I did do it a couple more times because other people need that experience of slamming the door on my fingers. Who am I to deny them their divine expression? That wasn't half bad, though, because it didn't hurt as bad as I thought it would. What hurt afterwards is when it got all bloody into there and they had to cut it to let the blood out. Oh, that's what hurts. Oh, that's misery. Oh, you all know something about that. But that wasn't half bad as other people saying, what happened to your finger? Oh, I'll bet that hurt. That's terrible looking. Ooh, God, that's ugly. Don't let me look at it. Oh, you want to look at one of the other ones? I'll just keep it hidden back there. You know, remember they do that and or you ran, somebody hit you? What happened? I ran to a doorknob. Why are you doing that low? I bend over. Yeah, sure. Somebody hit you. And they say, why'd you do your eye? I say, somebody hit me. I say, I don't believe that. I say, what else? Think I was bent over and the doorknob hit me? Often that thing that just comes out and tells the truth so disarms people that they enter into the truth with you. They'll enter into it with you, and then you start conducting divine energy. This conductivity is what keeps you going and wants you to participate in life, to participate in God all over with God in all the lives. But is that practical? No. But it is practical to participate in your own life. How do you do that? Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Is that all? It's a good start. Anything else? Yes, there's a lot of things depending upon where you're going, who you're going with, and when you want to get there. Then we enter into a new ball game of unfoldment. But first we must recognize the divine that is in us. Some people say, but I don't believe that. It's like, well, what do you think runs your body when you've gone to sleep? the subconscious. What's that? I said, well, that's what runs my body when I'm asleep. I said, that's what we call the divine. I said, oh, okay. I'll just call it the subconscious. I said, I don't care what you call it. That's what's doing it. I said, well, who runs it when I'm awake? You. Well, that's not the subconscious. No, but that's still the divine. It's just a different process. The dog is going to come out the same. You can determine it very easily. We can enter into that is the destruction of the ego. We can enter into that is the destroying of the desires. We can enter into that is a sacrifice of the self. And when you've got through doing those three approaches, that's what you've got, those three approaches. Because you are not living the love that you are, which is the divine. And I don't care what path you go on or what path you study or what kind of manipulations they've got going or what kind of techniques or spiritual exercises or anything else, if you're not loving as you do it, you do nothing. People came up to me and they said, oh, John Roger, I'm really growing. I said, you are? And they said, yes, I was sitting looking at all these things around the people. I saw these lights and these colors and these forms, and it was really great. I said, is that all? And they said, yes. I said, didn't you love them? They said, oh, I forgot. And I said, then there is no value in your idiocy of looking at auras, lights, colors, or anything else. And if you're loving them, you don't care if you see anything else. For love will see itself. And love will do itself. And all you do is sit there and let it radiate through you. And you can sit there, not smiling, but sit there, and it will radiate through you. That's how you recognize the spiritual one. They will just let it radiate through them. And that's the process of living love. That's the total path. Not the path of destroy the ego, destroy desires, destroy the mind, become a fanatic. It is that total path. Because after you get through all of those and you rip off all the layers, underneath is the loving layer that is that very essence, that is the conducting of the divine. And when you're doing that, you are sitting right in the center of creation. Whether you see it or not has nothing at all to do about it. You are that very foundation, that focal point by which things revolve. And besides, it's very practical to be God. Be'erush Be'Shan.
John Rogers' closing words were Be'erush Be'Shan, which means the blessings already are. The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.
I had to remind people that this was time to extend the light and the peace to the animals. We're more like the wire between telephone poles. We're just opening up the communication, and then the voice that goes through really has nothing to do with us. In much the same way we open our hearts, our consciousness to animals, and the spirit of peace that goes through to them does the work. The peace that we gain from it is being in that position to just help moderate it through. And that's what we're here for. And if we can look at animals and tree and the land and say, this also I am, then we start to establish the harmony and the peace and the balance that's necessary. Because the earth of this country is really crying out, not just in this particular state of Africa, but even through the peoples. And it's not crying out for more cars and more televisions, but it is crying out for a harmonious forwardness. It's asking for an equilibrium, a balance in it, a balance in the utilization. But also, isn't that the thing that we're crying for in ourselves? Is it possible that this inner message of peace will actually let the lion and the ox sleep together, not in fear of being devoured? It's biblical scripture that says, in that time, in that day, in that place, when the Prince of Peace is to appear, then even babies can play around the holes of a poisonous snake and won't be bit. And animals that killed each other will sleep together. And even the lions will graze grass.